On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we look at the humongous stakes heading into the Raiders versus Chargers grand finale of the season. What should the Raiders do with interim head coach Rich Bisaccia? They discuss Las Vegas' role in the Raiders' three DUIs this year, plus all the highlights and lowlights from the win over the Indianapolis Colts. And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags,
RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. The Raiders. 9-7, free game win streak, tied for the longest win streak in the AFC.
In all of the AFC.
Flexed Sunday night football. Flex with me. That's what happens when you're the Raiders. You get flexed into prime time. Playing the Chargers Sunday night. Winner gets in, loser ends the season, basically. Biggest Raider game since... our playoff game 5 years ago, right? I can't think of a bigger Raider game in that long of time.
Yeah, that's the biggest one since then. This is we've been in the playoffs for 3 weeks already. I said it before. We've been in the playoffs since the Browns game that started our playoffs. We had to win out to make the playoffs.
You remember 5 weeks ago we did the video when we had six games left. We're like, all right, we need four games. We need to win four games of our next six to get to 10-7.
We lost the playoffs. First two.
We lost the first two. We were like, yeah, all right, season's over. Let's start rebuilding. Do we trade Carr? Bisaccia, you're gone. We could still get there. We got there the hard way.
I mean, so I told you we had to get to 10 to get in. 10 gets us in. And we had to win four out of the last six. Just fucking, we like to put ourselves against the wall. But we did it. You know, we're on our way. We just got to, you know, one more game to go. There's no other game that's as important as the game that we have. There's no more game that has as much on the line as this specific game because everything is on the line for both teams.
It's basically cut and dry as you can get, right? Essentially, when and you're in. The Steelers have a little thing going on. Jaguars and Colts have a little thing going on, but more or less, Raiders got to beat the Chargers Sunday night in prime time. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. You know the deal. You know the job. How else can we stay in your lives and continue to force our wonderful opinions on you and our analysis and objective look?
Shove them down your throat.
At all things Las Vegas Raiders, if you don't like, comment, and subscribe. Interesting little side note. It's never going to happen, but I just love little things like this. Wrong one. Adam Beasley on Twitter. Here's something totally bonkers. If the Colts lose to the Jaguars on Sunday, the Raiders and Chargers would both get in with a tie. Literally, there would be no motivation for either team to do anything other than kneel it out 15 times. Now, I can't think personally, myself, a better way to give the double bird to Roger Goodell and the NFL than to say, oh, yeah, the primetime game, the last game of the regular season, the last game of the biggest season of all time that the NFL was toting all season long. Just kick Roger Goodell metaphorically in the twig and berries and just go take a knee and go for the tie for five quarters. Because it would go to overtime, and for five quarters, you just take knees, get the tie. They both go in, pisses off everybody. God, it would be so satisfying to do that to Goodell.
I mean, yes, but... One of the better things, like there's a big, I don't know, conversation. Like if you poll people, would you rather watch your best friend kick somebody's ass or watch your worst enemy get their ass kicked? We can do both in the same game. We can propel ourselves to the playoffs and knock off the Chargers at the same time, which is doubly good. I think I'd go for that.
I mean, either way, right? Like, it would be more connivingly hilarious. I like hilarious revenge, you know, like ironic revenge. Like Roger Goodell is like, oh, last primetime game, last game of the season. And it's just a kneel fest for five quarters.
Were you channeling Vince McMahon right there? Oh my God.
It's getting me so.
It's Sunday night football on NBC.
And it's just the worst shit ever. I mean, that would be legendary.
That would be taken off right away. What was that like?
It would go immediately to I Love Lucy reruns, like right away. Shit. They would cut away and do something.
Obviously,
it's never going to happen in a million years, but it does. I don't know. I did think about it.
The possibility is there. What if, like, it's like, all right, overtime, freaking 2 seconds left. Carlson's lining up for the field goal. It's game's tied. And they hike it, and he just goes like this. It's time. We're both going.
Now, of course, this can only happen if the Jags beat the Colts. Jags lost 50 to something?
50 to 10 or something like
50
that.
50 to 10, like some gross number.
Dude, and it was like they weren't flinging the ball around the field. Like they were just like running their offense.
Playing football. We're just playing football. Yeah.
God, damn.
That would be great. But still, though, even with this RJ's morbid fantasy aside. What a great end of the season for the Raiders. Even win or lose. Like, obviously, it's going to be distraught if we lost. But what a great way to end the rockiest, craziest, most unlucky Raiders season of all time. Whole front office exploded before the season began. John Gruden gone the way that he was. Multiple DUIs on this team. The tragedy that was Henry Ruggs. Waller's injury. Other major injuries. All the drama that happened, and then we end up still with a shot at the playoffs against one of our worst rivals, AFC West rival, prime time to get in. I mean, just getting here, I'm so proud of this squad. Now, I need a victory.
We're not done yet,
but I can't help but just feel like after all we've overcome to get to our next biggest challenge. Is something to be proud of.
I just want to get the whole out of the way. Like, if when I tell somebody that I'm a Raider fan, they're like, I get that. Like, fucking Raiders. And why do you think they do that? Because this is a game, typically, that they would shit the bed. A game that means a lot, right? A game that has a lot of attention on them. The game that, oh, hey, you know what? They have a winning streak, like, coming back off a bye, they're doing really well like the last few years. Like, oh, they're in the mix. They're in the top eight ranked in the league by ESPN. This person has them beating this team and this team. And they come out and they shit the bed up. The Raiders. They're just going to Raider. Raiders are going to Raider, right? Mm-hmm. This is our chance. This is why I'm not like in for like, well, you know, even if they lose, you know, they still had a good year. They still showed a lot of heart. Doesn't matter. They could have gone 0-17. They're still not in the playoffs. And there's no moral victories in football. Like you either win or you don't, and your hard work has to mean something. You could be the hardest working player on the team. If you don't make plays, you're not going to have a job. So I am going to be tough. We have to win this game. How do you change a culture? By doing what you set out to do and doing it the way that you want. Successes. You build on those accomplishments and that changes mindsets. That changes the narrative. That changes perceptions of you as a group or player or team or whatever organization. It starts with getting those accomplishments done. Getting close to the playoffs is nobody's accomplishment in the NFL. Making it to the playoffs is.
It's changing. Like you said, it's changing bad habits. It's rectifying mistakes, and we're already kind of doing that, right? Like the last two seasons started super hot. Completely fell apart down the stretch. Mm-hmm. Late in this season, 3-game win streak to close out, you know, up until this, you know, if it were a regular 16-game season, we'd end the season on a 3-game win streak.
I agree with you because it's
baby steps, right? It's giant accomplishments or, you know, marathons are run a step at a time, right? And we are making those. We're not at the finish line. We're not anywhere close. It's no time to like pull over and start sucking each other's dicks. But we're making the steps in the right direction. We're getting to that, to our goals that we've made. And one of the big ones was don't fall apart late in the season like we did the last two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
That we can start Not all the boxes are checked, but that's a giant box that we can check this season for the Raiders.
So when the Giants beat the undefeated Patriots in the Super Bowl, they were 6-6. They won their last four games to make it into the playoffs, and they ran the table. It's possible to do. They were a wild card team. They were, I think, the seventh seed or something like that, or ACF, or sixth or fifth or sixth seed. I don't remember which one they were. But they had to win a lot. They had to win the wild card game. They had to, you know, go through the hard.
They were on the road the whole time.
And and how they did it was pressure on the quarterback, opportunistic defense. Quarterback made plays when he needed to. And that's kind of like what we've been doing, putting pressure on the quarterback. Defense stepped up towards the end of the year. I think their issue was more injuries on their defensive side, but that's when they really rolled out the NASCAR defense with the four defensive ends on passing downs. And, you know, Antonio Pierce just played his ass off at middle linebacker. And, you know, fucking mouth breather Manning just freaking went out there and just slung the ball all over the field. So it's possible, man. That's why I always say, you know, like everyone wants to go, oh, you want Aaron Rodgers. He's only won one Super Bowl. Yes, but he's perennially in the playoffs every single year. And that's really all you can ask for, because honestly, it's just a crapshoot. If we beat, I think it was three top 11 teams in the NFL this year ranked currently, and we've lost to four bottom 11 teams. So it's like week to week, it's like anything can happen. So you're just getting into that tournament, just getting in there. It's like, that's what you want. And hopefully you get hot. Like, we're hot right now. You stay hot all the way through.
In poker, all you need is a chip and a chair. In the NFL, you just need a seat at the playoffs.
Just that's all you need.
Right? This isn't like the Bears last season that like limp dicked in at 8-8 and there wasn't like any pieces for the success for him. Like, we've got a quarterback that's proven. We have a quarterback that's proven he can ball when he needs to. Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue, would it be shocking if in the playoffs in a game they had a combined 5 sacks, 6 sacks, 7 sacks?
No.
Wouldn't be shocking at all. No. Josh Jacobs,
those quarterbacks
for 120 yards in a game, not shocking, right?
They've had a combined, I think 8 was the most quarterback hits combined in a game. Those quarterback hits, those are like right after the ball is let go.
Because quarter of a second difference.
Yeah, there'd be penalties if they weren't, right? So it's possible to do that. They've done it before where they're just right there, you know, right there. I remember an interview with DeMarco Farr was doing the interview. And he was, they were asking like, hey, what are you thinking when you're like rounding the corner and you just beat a tackle and you're about to get a sack? And DeMarco Farr was like, don't throw it. Cause like, I know I'm right there. Don't throw that ball because I'm going to get this sack. It's possible to do. And we get the pressure on the quarterback. We're doing better against the run. We've found this kind of mix that works at linebacker. You know, it just seems like anyone we plug in our secondary.
I mean, we've got so many pieces. Like, we have so many pieces that are just like inches away from huge success. Like, we've dropped so many interceptions. We have all these pressures that could have been sacks. We've got Derek Carr that can throw for 450 yards in a game if he needs to. We've got Josh Jacobs that can run for 120 yards in a game if he needs to. We've got linebackers that can shut down a run game. Like, we haven't been able to do all those things all at once. Injuries, but it's like, it's not like when Michael Bisping knocked out Luke Rockhold for the middleweight championship. Right. Ooh. He's a giant underdog. He'd already lost to Luke Rockhold. Right. And I'm like, okay, like, can Michael Bisping win this fight? Sure. But he's going to have to do something he's never done before. He never had one punch knockout before ever in his career or ever since. He never knocked. He was a volume guy. Right. Mm-hmm. Just out cardio you, outwork you, tire you out, win the decision or get a late TKO, something like that. He basically one punch knockout Luke Rockhold, something he had to do something he'd never done before to win that title. That's not the Raiders. We don't have to do something we've never, ever done before. We don't need any player to do something above and beyond that they've never done before.
We got to do it at the same time.
we just got to do it all together and keep the mistakes down. Like, and that's a comforting feeling. Like, clearly there's a lot of holes with the Raiders, a lot of mistakes that can be fixed. But the idea that it's like, all right, we don't need a random player who's never done shit to do something he's never done before to win. We just need everyone to do what they're capable of.
So look, 1981, the last time that we won the Super Bowl, okay? We were the first wild card team to do it. We had just gotten fucked over.
Wasn't it 84?
No, it was 81.
Well, we won it in 81 and we won it in 80 and 80 in 84.
I think that was 81 when we
That was the 83 season, 84 Super Bowl.
Oh, you're right. It was 84 Super Bowl, 84.
Yeah.
So we had just gotten
screwed over. I remember it because I was, well, I don't remember it, but I know it because I was 6 months old. I can say, like, yeah, I was alive when the Raiders won a Super Bowl. I was shitting my pants and sucking my thumb, but I was alive.
They won one last week?
Yeah, it was 12 months.
No, but they were a wild card team. They got hot late. They were shoving it up Pete Rozelle's ass for screwing him over on a stadium. And I mean, I said it earlier this year, like, wouldn't it be just poetic? We're getting so screwed over. We're getting this and that. And they're coming down on us and like the whole Gruden thing. Wouldn't it be poetic if we were to just kind of like get hot late, get in as a wild card, win the whole damn thing and just give the freaking double bird to freaking football hating pussy Goodell.
It would be back to the outcast Raiders flipping the script. It would be
man,
too perfect.
All those guys that they had on their team that nobody wanted, that this is what we're doing here. Like, we stole Perryman from the Panthers.
Highway like, robbery.
We stole him.
There is a warrant out for Mayock's arrest for grand theft linebacker.
Desmond Trufant played really well. And he was out there for the picking. Like, anyone could have had him. Divine Diablo was sitting on the bench for three quarters of the season, just kind of sitting there like, okay, a fifth round pick. No one really knew what he was going to be. And he comes in here. He's like probably one of our better, like behind Perryman, one of our best linebacker.
Got Casey Hayward for cheap.
Casey Hayward, really nobody wanted him either. He was out there to be had and nobody wanted him. I mean, Hobbs comes out there, a guy that, you know, talked the big game early in the year, just started to go out there and playing more and more. Okay, he's flashing. Okay, he's steady.
Andre
he's
James got thrown in there, right? Like, he was just
Andre James
to
not
for
yet.
Rodney Hudson. I don't know.
Not one of the better centers
he's
in the
improving.
League. You know, the center, better better. I mean, a couple weeks ago, Brandon Parker was like one of the highest rated PFF tackles, you know, against, I think it was against the Broncos. Like, what the hell's going on here? Our running game is coming together late. It's like, these things just need to fall in place at the right time. That's why I said, you want to be ramping up towards the end of the year. All these mistakes, all these little things that you're tweaking just need to come together at the end of the year because we have talent on the team. We just, we'll talk about what we need to do later, but there's talent on this team. It just needs to fall into place.
It's like that chick in high school that was weak the whole time. And you bump into her at junior college when you're 19 and all of a sudden she just blossomed at the right time. You're like, God damn, girl. What happened? Like, that's
hopefully
us.
Hopefully she still has like the daddy issues and insecurities. So you just be like, so,
exactly. Like, she's still got like the ugly girl heart, but she's hard on the outside.
God.
You know what I mean?
Like, show me pictures of you like a year ago. Were you like really big a year ago? And like, you lost a bunch of weight. Sweet. Let's go there.
That's the one.
That's the one.
Well, so
it's already been big. I'll take a big too. I don't give a fuck.
I know you will. I'm very aware, Soto. Now, with all the good things happening, it comes with a kind of uncomfortable question. What do the Raiders do with Rich Bisaccia now? And that's the question that we're going to have. That's the question of the day. Should Rich Bisaccia, our interim head coach, who led us to a 9-7 season, led us through all of the shit that this season was, should he get the permanent head coaching job? And if the answer is no, what can he do to earn it from here on out? Because like we made it abundantly clear, let's not pat each other on the back quite yet. We still got a lot to do. Mm-hmm. So that's the question of the day. It'll be pinned in the comment section. Curious what you guys think. It's a tough question because I think we know what Bisaccia's faults are. We've seen it. I still hold very true that I think he was the perfect guy for this specific interim job. For this job, I 100% believe that he was the right guy for it because he wasn't going to come in and clean house, change
systems.
Yeah,
for the situation.
Have the team take like a vicious left turn to like be part of his image and like try to be Gruden. It's like, no, he's like, okay, like we have systems. It's too late to like overhaul everything. Mm-hmm. Let's just keep it all together. Let's just keep everyone. And we've heard him time and time again. players love him. Like these Raiders team, these Raider players love him. And he's that kind of coach, right? He's like every player, when they were asked about what's it like with having your new interim coach, Rich Bisaccia, he wasn't like, oh my God, he's an offensive genius. Or, oh my God, he's so hard on me. But it's just like, hey, I know he loves us. I know he's going to keep everything tight.
Good dude.
He cares about us and we care about him and we're going to play hard for him. Will Compton said it when he did his, you know, because he was a Raider for like 45 minutes and then gone. We got our linebackers back, but he said like good things about Rich Bisaccia. With Perryman this week talked about how Bisaccia's been so even keel. And that's exactly what we need in a season like this, where it's just freaking anarchy, like the most rocky season in Raiders history. You need steady hands on the wheel, right? You don't need John Gruden white knuckling it and just jerking it to where he wants to go. Someone chilling, you know, putting on some jazz, rolling down the window a little bit, putting on some classic rock. The kids are going bonkers in the back seat, right? They're going nuts. They're throwing iPads at each other, right? Giving each other wet willies, Indian burns. Old man Rich Bisaccia, dad, just driving the minivan.
Got that Eagles, best of Eagles, greatest hits.
Take it easy, take it easy. Just chilling, you know what I mean?
Look, man, and the thing with Bisaccia is he's learning on the job, and he's – I don't want to say he's getting better because these games are kind of ugly. We're still winning them. I don't know that it's anything that he's doing specifically to kind of tilt it one way or the other. I think for me, for Bisaccia to have serious considerations, they not only need to make the playoffs, but they need to have a good showing in the playoffs. He needs to show that what our expectation is not too big for him. So when like he needs to first get into the playoffs, and in that playoff game, we don't fall flat on our face. We make a good showing of ourselves. Does that mean we have to win? Not necessarily. If we're in the game and it's a good game, it's a playoff team. It's going to be a good team that we're playing, and we're going to have a low seed, so it's going to be one of the better teams in the division. So if we make a good showing and he doesn't look overwhelmed or like he's out of place, like he did a couple of times during some of those Chiefs losses, okay then. Now he's in consideration. Unless that happens, he's not even in consideration because that's our expectation now. Our expectation is we need to be a perennial playoff team to give ourselves a chance to be in the championship games almost like every year. That's our expectation, right? So we need to make sure that our coach is not overwhelmed in those moments.
Yeah, the bar has moved up and down a lot this season. Right, like started off 3-0. Like we're thinking, like you know, deep playoff, Super Bowl, right? And fall apart again, long losing streak. Fall to 6-7. You're like, all right, blow everything up. 3-game win streak, 1 game away, you know, 1 win away from the playoffs. Like the bar keeps moving. And Bisaccia has just been coolly handling it the whole time. Now, I'm still not convinced yet that he's the man moving forward. But I have been really proud of him, and I am glad that he was our interim coach for this, like, crazy season. With that being said, no matter what happens, I still want to run through the head coaches that are available and see who's ready, right? Like my standard's always been like, yeah, I'm a Derek Carr guy, but like every single position on this roster, if you can upgrade, you at least kick the tires, right? Like you're always looking to upgrade every single position, no matter what. Nobody is safe, not a single position. Head coach least of all, right?
Oh yeah.
So with that said, so the X is like the logistics of it are kind of weird because we don't know about the GM position either, right? Does Mayock stay? Is the new GM going to pick the head coach? Like is Mark Davis going to do it all by himself? Like that's the other parts that we're not going to get an exact question to. But we got all of offseason to go through that. But because the Jaguars and soon to be other teams are going to start looking for head coaches yesterday, the search has to start now or we're going to be left behind.
For sure. You definitely have to start looking, at least kicking some tires and having some off the record conversations. You know, there's been a lot of names thrown around and, you know, all these names that we're going to, you know, I'm going to kind of brush over. They all make sense, for one reason or another. So we talked about Bisaccia. He knows the team, right? He's familiar with the guys, he has the guys' respect. He has them playing hard. He has them ramping up and peaking at the right time. The issue that I have with this, and I don't know what, how you feel, but I don't know that he would make too many changes in the coaching staff. And I think that there might be, there should be a little bit of a shakeup, because BD said it a couple of weeks ago, where they're very stagnant, they're very stale, they're very antiquated in their approach at this well, level.
That's the other part of this question. Like, does the head coach get GM powers the way that Gruden did?
Well, I don't know who it is.
I hope.
Yeah, don't. But usually, a head coach would, you know, be able to pick his staff. So, that's something that I'm really concerned with, because I agree with BD. Having looked at all this film, it's very stagnant, and you know, in a way, it's good because it allows your players to just go out there and play, not have to think so much. But when you get into, you know, go against a team like let's say the Chiefs, who know what you're going to run and they know how to beat it, and they have the players that are good enough to beat it, that's when they rack up 40 something points against us, you know. So that's why I would rather have something. I mean, if Bisaccia does get it, I don't know. That's one of the negatives for me too. I don't know if there's going to be a lot of changes like Olsen, stuff like that. And again, it's a double edged sword. Olsen, yes. Carr knows the system. If we get a new you know, OC in, Carr's not showing that he's, you know, really adaptable to a system the first year. How's that going to play out? There's a lot of question marks there. So that's good and bad.
What if he becomes head coach? He does get the actual head coach, and he just does a complete 180. He just gets super power hungry. Just like changes everything, makes everyone call him sir, right? Just like fires everybody, hires his kids.
Yeah, right. Kiss.
He's just walking around with like a giant gold chain. He's got this like this pimp cane that he's walking around in.
That'd be so sweet. I'd love it. All right. Sasha. So another name that's been thrown out is Jim Harbaugh. Rumored that he would be interested. Here's the thing with the college.
He has one good season at Michigan, and now everyone wants a piece.
But
nobody wanted him last season.
But
no one in college wanted him.
But he made it to the NFC Championship game 3 out of 4 years in San Francisco. So he has had success in the NFL. He has a Raiders tie. He was the greatest quarterback coach in 02 and 03. I don't know how many people know that, but he was a quarterback coach in 02 and 03 with the Raiders. It's interesting. I at first I'm like, well, you know, if we're going to get a college guy, I want to have a college guy that has had some NFL experience, which everyone on this list does. But Harbaugh and the other college coaches, there's two more on here. With the transfer portal the way it is now, it's like it's really difficult to build a lasting program unless you're one of the top 1, 2, 3, 4 programs in the country. Because even if you do recruit these great players to come in and they don't want to sit, they'll just fucking go somewhere else next year. They don't care. And nothing's stopping them either. So with that volatility in the college game right now, I mean, the money's good.
Is Michigan a top 10 program?
I wouldn't say no. I mean, they had a good season this year, but I wouldn't say they're the top 10.
Because I think that's kind of like the barrier, right? If you're a top 10 program, you could probably hang on to most of your guys. And then after that, especially with NILs.
Hell, dude, look at Joe Burrow in Ohio State. He left Ohio State. You know, guys are leaving Alabama to go to Oklahoma. Like, dude, nobody's safe. If they don't like the situation, okay, I'm jetting.
But if you're a high enough program, like you could also be the benefactor of that. You know what I'm saying? That'll bail somewhere and go there.
No, and again, a top player is not going to leave. Like a Jalen Hurts is not going to leave Alabama to go to Oklahoma if there wasn't a Tua Tagovailoa that's already there taking his spot. So you're still going to have players, but
which has never been a problem at Michigan. We have too many amazing quarterbacks.
All right. So there is a lot of volatility in the college game, so that it could be an option there for him. Say what you want to say about Harbaugh in college and the pros. He had a lot of success. Coach Shaw from Stanford. He also has Raider tie. He was a coach on the Raiders for 4 years, so he does have pro experience. Really smart dude. He's actually been linked to the Raiders for quite a few years. Just a guy that, you know, hey, what about Coach Shaw, what about him? You know, he's got Raider ties. He's, you know, in the Bay Area already at Stanford. For all accounts, he has a good relationship with Mark Davis. I mean, it's interesting. He's built a good program where it's, you know, traditionally been a little bit more difficult to build a program because of the academic restrictions at Stanford. But
no such problem with the Raiders. You don't have to deal with geniuses in Vegas. No such problem
with
Vegas.
Deal with any of that shit.
Not an issue.
So I mean, there's success. A respected coach that's going to come with some respect. You know, he has a track record of building a program where it's maybe a little bit more difficult to build a strong program, and he has NFL experience. So there's
Shaw and Harbaugh both fit the Mark Davis of once a Raider, always a Raider, hire from within. It's something I hate about the Raiders. It's something I want them to change. Like, it needs to stop being a mom and pa shop. It needs to be run more like a Fortune 500 company and not like our favorite taqueria down the street. Like, it needs to be run bigger. But these are two guys where it's like, okay, like,
they check all the boxes.
They check the boxes, and it also keeps Mark Davis feeling like, oh, I'm still getting somebody with silver and black in their bloods. Like, okay, like, it's allowable in this case.
Yeah, it makes sense. And that's one of the reasons why I'm highlighting them off the list, is because they do check more than just, okay, this guy was successful, he's got ties, you know, he's building programs, he's, you know, this and that. Dabo Swinney was seen at a Raider home game wearing Raider gear.
That's literally the only thing that ties him to the Raider job, is that he showed up to a game once.
Yeah, it's weird.
He got like four players on the team. Yeah, right. The bye week. He's like, oh, I'll go. Like, oh, he gave me a free collared shirt. Cool, I'll wear it. And everyone's like, ooh, Dabo to the Raiders. It's like,
yeah, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. I'm not big on hiring. I'm not big on hiring college guys that don't have any pro experience. It's a different game. How you handle the players is different. Look at Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer is a piece of work anyway, but he's the worst case scenario of what can happen at a smaller level. And I would actually rather happen the way it happened. If we have a bad coaching hire, like if we do get Dabo Swinney, I would rather him flame out in the first year than have a slow burn of like,
The first five games.
Yeah.
Like, have it just explode quick.
I want that thing to age like an avocado, all right? Not like a pack of corn tortillas. You know, I want it to like go bad quick if it's bad.
Where would we be if Roger Goodell, like the second Gruden was hired? He's like, fuck this guy. I'm going to release the emails now. I wonder where we'd be right now.
Oof,
better? No. Worse?
Honestly, for all those shortcomings that John Gruden has as a coach, he did drill a lot of positive stuff into Derek Carr that he's still using now. He's got
wouldn't have had better. Two wasted seasons with Gunther.
That's true. Three, actually. But honestly, like, as far as going forward, Derek Carr's pre-snap read, the way he can, that's all Gruden. That was something that he. The way he can command an offense from the line, that's a very big plus. Now there's a lot of bad, but that's something that's pretty darn good, you know. And these players that we're talking about, I mean, Gruden selected a lot of these guys, so it wasn't all bad. But yeah, I think that maybe having a coach that's a little bit less about being on TV and being a personality, and more about, you know, doing what's right, and then just having your buddy carpooling and keeping him having a job. I don't know that Gunther would have lasted too long with anybody else as head coach. He lasted his third year with us, almost the entire third year.
The Las Vegas Hooters would be hurting for more, would be hurting for money. If that was the case.
Well, yeah,
be nearly as profitable.
Mm-hmm. He does love his Hooters.
Mm-hmm.
The last name on the list I'm going to touch on is Byron Leftwich. I brought it up to you guys a couple of weeks ago. Byron Leftwich was very similar to a Greg Olsen at the beginning of last year, where Bruce Arians was the head coach and the play caller, and Byron Leftwich was left to kind of implement the offense and kind of like be like a pseudo quarterback type coach. The first, I think it was like the first six games, they weren't very good. They were like 2-4 or something like that. Byron Leftwich took over the play calling, and they got much better. And ever since then, their offense has been clicking. And he's just been looked at by a lot of teams, a lot of people around. And I've, you know, everything that I've heard is that this guy is smart, respected. He's been in the league, played in the league a lot of years. He's coached in the league now at a high level, and he's not too far removed from playing where he doesn't, he can't kind of get that extra bond with the players.
The issue I have with Byron Leftwich is, yeah, his offense is great because he has a top five offensive line. Tom Brady has his quarterback, insane weapons at wide receiver. Gronk as his tight end. Like, okay, like, yeah, he's put together a hell of an offense with like one of the best ensembles in the NFL. Like,
true, but they were okay, not playing like, nearly as well as they were when Bruce Arians was calling the plays. Mm-hmm. The thing well, now, I who's like calling about the plays,
Tom or Leftwich?
No, Leftwich is calling the plays. Now, the thing is he giving the concepts in? Is he shooting the concepts in to Brady and allowing him to select from the concepts, very similar to what Gruden did to Carr? So I'm sure that before Leftwich got there, Brady had some measure of control because he is Tom Brady, right? But you can't deny that the offense got much better once Leftwich took over. So I'm not saying he should or shouldn't get the job. I'm saying that those are the positives.
Yeah. So those are the looks at the head coach. The big question, though, what do we do with Rich Bisaccia? Do we keep him as head coach permanently? Again, leave your comment section, question of the day. Next thing up, yet again, a Raiders player. Glug, glug, glug. Rev, rev, rev. Luckily, there's no crash this time.
I couldn't believe this.
TMZ, because, of course, it's always TMZ, at a report on Monday, our beloved rookie slot cornerback, Nate Hobbs, was arrested for DUI just hours after the team's huge win over the Colts. Police say the rookie was found passed out in his car. Law enforcement tells TMZ Sports that cops responded to the Cromwell Hotel around 4 a.m. on Monday after witnesses say Hobbs was asleep at the wheel on a parking lot exit ramp. So it wasn't driving, at least he had parked himself, fell asleep, didn't crash, no one was hurt, luckily for that. 22 years old. Rich Bisaccia was asked about it. He basically said, yeah, we're gonna let the law enforcement handle it. He's gonna play on Sunday against the Chargers. That the football part's null and void. But this was another like very narrowly avoided disaster. Like this again, Josh Jacobs got arrested for DUI in January last, I believe it was January last year. Obviously, we all know the Henry Ruggs travesty. And now this, that's three Raiders players getting caught behind the wheel with alcohol in their system in a 1-year ban.
I don't understand. I hope and pray that Hobbs just realized, wow, I'm really drunk. I'm just going to stop my car right now. Maybe he thought it was a parking spot that he stopped into instead of the off-ramp of a parking structure. I hope that's what happened, and he just didn't, like, pass out and, like, look, while he was looking for his card to, like, pay to leave the parking structure or something. And he wasn't intending on driving, and he actually stopped himself, and that's what I'm going to freaking just stay here and sleep it off type of thing. Because I've done that. I've gotten in my car in a parking structure, and I'm like, oh, man, it's not going to work. I'm just going to sleep here. But I didn't, like, try to drive out, you know? But it's just after all that's happened, all that happened with Ruggs and that whole tragedy and just the track record of poor decision making as far as driving on his behalf, it's just very disheartening to have this happen again on the same team. It just sucks.
This is easily the 37th biggest controversy that's hit the Raiders this season.
Like, it has, but the thing is
one more thing after another.
But you have to take a look at something, and I think we're going to talk about this a little bit later, is why is this happening again, even though nothing happened as far as no one got hurt or anything like that. But it's like if a classmate is playing with a gun and shoots himself, and then like you're playing like, and then that's like someone in the same class starts playing with a gun and it goes off and it almost kills somebody. Like, dude, did you not learn from what happened earlier this year?
Yeah.
It's like the same thing. It's just not, nothing bad happened as far as the last guy, but like, didn't you learn anything? You know, and it's just disheartening to hear that. It's just,
it's also where, like, the Cromwell in Vegas, that's where Dre's is located.
Mm-hmm.
Dre's is an after hours club in Vegas. Like, that's where, like, that's where you go to party when you've been partying all night and you still want to party.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the after, like, it's like you've been at What Oak for 3 hours and it's 2:30 in the morning and you want a change of pace. You go to Dre's. Like, that's where he went. He wasn't at a buddy's house. He wasn't at a local dive bar. He went to where you party after you've been partying. And he had just played a full football game like 10 hours earlier. Like, he was in, he had gotten off the plane at McCarran Airport and literally like hung a right on the strip to go to Dre's on the way home. Like, this, like, he was going to party on Sunday night, come hell or high water. Like, this is like, come on, Nate. Like, this is, hopefully it's a wake up call, like you said. And for people who are saying like, hey, you know, it's, he shouldn't be allowed to play, he's getting special treatment, it's like, no, he's not. He's not.
Yeah.
One, we don't know his blood alcohol level. It doesn't sound like, he doesn't have any priors. No one was injured. Like, look, he's gonna face some kind of consequence, but like, I have multiple buddies with multiple DUIs.
Mm-hmm.
They all got to go to work on Monday, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Nate Hobbs is no different. It's not special treatment that he's still working. But it does bring up another element, because I got a lot of friends in Vegas. I work in Vegas, like I said, just about every single weekend. And Vegas is very sensitive about its reputation as Vegas. To them, it's like, look, we have the strip where the debauchery happens, and the rest of Vegas is a great city. It's got suburbia, it's got families, it's got schools, it's got museums. It's just a nice, it's a great, wonderful city to live in, to raise a family, etc. And then there's the strip, which is its own little bubble, right? And so when the Raiders moved to Las Vegas, people are thinking, oh man, are these, you know, 23-year-old millionaires, young, dumb, and full of cum, are they going to be able to handle being in Sin City? And it's always defended with like, no, it's the strip, they'll get over it. And I was with them. I agreed with it because I'm in that same boat. Like I said, I'm in Vegas 30 times a year. And it's not, when I was going there in my early 20s, once a year, it was balls out, right? Like, how much booze can I drink? How much can I gamble? How many strip clubs can I go to? It was like balls to the wall. And I've been there so many times, it's like, I'm going to go to work. Maybe I'll get something to eat. Then I'm going to crash, right? Every now and then, mm-hmm. I'll go to a titty bar because there's great titty bars there. But most of the time, I'm just there working, almost like I live there. And so when Josh Jacobs got his DUI, people are like, oh man, it's Vegas. And I defended it. It's like, no, I don't. Anyone can get a DUI anywhere. Henry Ruggs and his awful travesty. That happened. It was like, look, he was at Top Golf, like he was golfing, and then at a friend's house. I literally, during the like in the midst of the Henry Ruggs problem, Steve Cofield, who's hasn't been on the show yet, but he will. He's a radio host in Las Vegas, has been for decades. I used to work with him at SiriusXM, good friend of mine. I was texting back and forth about this, and literally, I will read the text verbatim. We were talking about this back and forth, and I said, Ruggs gank came from golf. Arnett made that bid in his house when Damon Arnett, you know, got rolled for his thing.
Mm-hmm.
I said, if a group of them got arrested at Dre's at 4 a.m., then we can talk. And he texted back, bingo. That's what happened. Like, this is now, like, now it's, I think, time to open up that conversation again. When it was just Jacobs, when it was just Ruggs, it was like, all right, isolated incidents. Now there's a pattern. Now there's a pattern here, and it is something unique to Vegas. Dre's, you party till 4 a.m., you go crazy there on Sundays, right? Like, this wasn't, like, it was Friday night, it was Sunday night. Like, people go to work on Mondays, right? This was unique to Vegas. We were talking about that before the show. Other big cities, partying is a little bit of a, if you're in the NFL, partying is, it takes a little bit of work. It's a little bit of a chore. Like, if I'm playing for the Jets or Giants, or I'm playing for the Rams, or I'm playing for the Dolphins in these like big metropolitan cities, I probably live in the suburbs. My training facility is probably some random spot. The stadium is far away. It's not usually downtown. The party area is normally a separate place. Like you kind of have to drive all over metropolitan areas to do your partying, right? Like the airport's way off away, right? Vegas, it's all within like 15 square miles.
It's a bubble.
Like if you're living in Summerlin, which is the really, really nice suburbs of Las Vegas, in the northwestern part of Las Vegas, if you land in McCarran Airport, you have like the stadium is right there, the training facility is right there, the strip's right there, and Summerlin's 10 minutes away. You literally can go from the airport, go to your house that's 8 minutes away, shit, shower, and shave, swing by the facility to drop off your gear, drive to the club, all in like 20 minutes. It's all right there. Like you don't have, it's not a chore, right? Like when you and I, like when we were in 20s, we go party in LA, like it was a chore. Like you had to plan it out, drive down there, drive back. It was
who's going to drive? Where are we going to park?
Who's going to drive? Where? Yeah. It was like a whole, like, do we know the guy there? Like it was a whole operation. In Vegas?
None of that.
You wake up and you fall into a titty bar. Right, it's like you just go there and like a sack of excuse? Falls into your nostril.
Listen, I stepped out of bed to brush my teeth in the morning, and there's some titties in my face. It's not my fault.
Like that's that part of Vegas. So
yeah,
when Rich Bisaccia was asked about that, our friend Vic Tafer asked him the question. Asked Bisaccia if he felt the message about drunk driving had been hit on hard enough with players given Ruggs' crash earlier, and Bisaccia said, "They've been hit over the face with distractions and things of that nature." Great line. I think he's right. We're very cognizant of the city in which we live in. So this is a very kind of just half-assed, not a dig at Las Vegas. And I think it's going to be overblown as we are doing now, as I plan to do here in the upcoming moments. But he did kind of divert the blame to the city. He did kind of say, like, look, we're living in Sin City. We're living in Las Vegas. Like, there's a lot of problems that can happen. Like, there's a lot of action going on down here. And it's unique to us. And my first reaction was, come on, Bisaccia, don't blame Vegas. But the more I kind of digested it, and then when you add on Josh Jacobs and Henry Ruggs' DUIs, you add on Damon Arnett just kind of being, maybe he'd probably be a troublemaker anywhere, but that's four players. Like three of them with alcohol issues and driving, four players with just making really bad decisions in Las Vegas. At some point, is it unfair to ignore that pattern and just say all four of those players, or specifically the three drunk drivers, all would have had that happen to them if they were playing for the Browns in Cleveland? I think it's unfair to ask that question.
I think Vegas might be that like super mushroom from Super Mario Brothers. It's like
just everything.
They're themselves, but Vegas is kind of like amplifies it a little bit.
Yeah.
Because of the ease of access, because of the proximity, because of the amount of choices that you have, because of your stature there, because it's a smaller city, like it's not really a huge area, you know. So all that stuff.
By NFL city standards, it's a tiny town by NFL city standards, right? Compared to LA, Chicago, New York, Dallas. Like it's small. It's a really small city compared to all those giant places. So sorry everyone who lives in Las Vegas who wants to defend Vegas all the time. You can't, it's not unfair to ask that question now. I think it's abundantly clear. Three arrested for drunk drivings in 365 days. It's fair to ask that question.
Yeah, I'm not trying to pile on to Vegas either. I'm just trying to give like a what if or an alternative view. So if you, my Vegas peeps don't come and kill me too hard.
All right. Well, back to the good stuff and the bad stuff and the ugly stuff. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Raiders 23, Colts 20 on Sunday. Really good team on the road that we beat on Sunday in the morning window. A lot of good things. Some things we got to work on. Take it away, Soto.
So we're going to start with the good like we always do.
Mm-hmm.
A new name, a new name and a new face to the good, the bad and the ugly. Marcus Mariota, he had 3 carries for 16 yards. All 3 carries were for first downs. Huge, huge. So
he had his first pass attempt of the season too, right?
Yeah. It was a great defensive play to knock that ball down. That ball was right there.
And I love, again, like my big thing with Mariota is like, obviously the main reason is, all right, a short down guy, a mobile quarterback. Let's like do something different, right? I love that. The other part is, let's just keep giving the next defensive coordinator more to worry about. Mm-hmm. Because the fact that he finally threw a pass now is now they're like, oh, fuck. Like now when Mariota is back there, we got to worry about the option. We got to worry about the RPO. We got to worry about the regular offense. And he might throw deep. Mm-hmm. Golson's crazy enough. He might have Marcus Mariota throw a 30-yarder. You know what I'm saying? So now these are all things that the Chargers and hopefully deep into the playoffs, all these defensive coordinators, that's another afternoon. That's another few hours of film they got to study. That's a whole new package they got to put together. Just keep loading on the hours that these defensive coordinators have to do that that take away from them stopping our already good offense that's already by itself. Love it.
Yep. You don't put Marcus Mariota in the game to pass the ball for like a 4-yard out, okay? If you're going to have Marcus Mariota go into the game, you want big chunk plays, right? He's not going to check the ball down when he can just run the ball himself, right? So defenses are going to have to keep an eye on that, and they have to plan for that now. They can't just key in on the run anymore because they know that if he does pass and if we're unprepared for that, he has a pretty deep ball. His touchdown pass, his deep pass to Waller last year against the Chargers was picture perfect. So This is, again, breaking tendencies. When Mariota comes in the game, up until last week, he was running. Guess what? He throws the ball. Uh-oh. They're not afraid to have him throw the ball anymore. So, again, breaking tendencies, having the defensive coordinators of the opposing teams, something else to prepare for, really big stuff. Moving on to your friend and mine, Zay Jones, had 8 receptions for 120 yards. Where the F did that come from?
Biggest great game job, of his career?
Zay Jones. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Gotta
he
be,
had,
right?
He had a 2-touchdown game for Buffalo, you know, when he was young receiver. But no, never. I don't think he ever had this many yards in a game. But that was a great job, Zay Jones. A friend of the program, Hunter Renfrow, 7 catches for 76 yards and a touchdown. Could have been
a quiet day for him.
Yeah,
it was a quiet day for him. No tackles, no passes broken up.
It could have been
half-assed that game.
Could have been 8 for 100 and 2 touchdowns if not for the ring finger of the defender of the Colts. So
Hunter Renfrow was, you know, the Raiders mic up a player every single game. He was the guy mic'd up. And it was funny because after that, he spent like the next like 10 things he said was to every player. He's like, hey, I'm glad they called that down because that's better for us. Because like now we can run the ball out, kick the field goal. They don't get the ball back, right? It was inches, right? Like that offense getting a touchdown in short, like we were in great shape, but he was right. Like, and is that not just the most proto like standard issue Hunter Renfrow? Like very never smart. Mind my amazing touchdown pass. It's more important that I go down. We run the clock out and kick a field goal. Like I could have had a massive game. Like you said, like eight receptions, 120 yards, 2 touchdowns. Could have had a monster game. It's like, Nope, I'd rather I was down so we can kick those field goals and get the W.
And more importantly, I was in a very close championship fantasy football game. I had Hunter Renfrow as my flex. That would have really helped me out. I ended up winning anyway. Thank you very much. But, you know, that extra points have been good.
Beep, beep.
Toot, toot. All right, moving along. Divine Diablo, 9 tackles, 9 solo, which he was hitting that hole nice and hard. Like RG likes to do. 1 tackle for loss, 1 pass defensed. Great job, Divine Diablo. Roderick Teamer. We thought, well, who's going to play safety? Who's going to play a strong safety? I guess it's going to be Teamer. How's he going to play? Home dude balled out. 8 tackles, 7 solo. So we didn't miss Abrams' contributions too much. And Teamer is better against the pass than Abrams is. So
He was more like Abram than you can even imagine, because that super wide open T.Y. Hilton pass that, thank God, Carson Wentz just completely.
Yeah, Teamer got a little.
That was Teamer. Teamer
got that one.
Teamer got lost in the fray. Like that was like he was He was early this season, Jonathan Abram, getting tackles, getting in the box, getting his helmet on people, and fucking blowing coverage. Like, that was Teamer, that wide open T.Y. Hilton.
Oh, my God.
Thank God Carson's going to Carson.
Right? Thank God for Roderick Teamer. Let me ask you a question real quick.
Who are the
best,
for you.
The best five defensive tackles alive?
Phylon. Phylon, 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 Phylon.
Yes, there's Phylon. 8 tackles out of the defensive tackle position. That is a shit ton of tackles. A lot. 4 or 5 tackles out of a lineman is a lot for a game. He had 8. He was always in the backfield. Great job. Six of those were solo. And he had a pass defense. So he was all over the place. So good job, Phylon.
He was going to go to Dre's with Nate Hobbs, but he was too tired because he had too big of a game.
I actually played really hard today, so I'm going
to
be
going to crash. I don't have a chance to go to like the after party at 3:45 a.m. at Dre's.
Defense only really gave up 13 points. That long touchdown, that was super lucky. I mean, that was just – Wentz just threw it up to throw it up, and it just happened to bounce off
one of our guys. And I threw up in my mouth when God, I saw it.
I was so pissed off. So, I mean, they ended up giving up 20, but in actuality, they only really gave up 13 points. So, great job there by the defense. Man, big sack Carlson, dude. Just goes out there like nothing, like butter. Game winner. He got the turkey leg on Thanksgiving. He beat the freaking Browns. He takes care of the Colts. Another game-winning field goal by Carlson. So, great work by Daniel Carlson. Worth every penny.
All right, I mean, he got that $16 million, and he's like, all right, I don't want them to get buyer's remorse.
No returns.
18.4.
18.4.
He's like, all right, I 18.4. I'm gonna make sure I earn it. I don't want these guys to get pissed at me. Mm-hmm.
All right, that was the good. Here comes the bad.
A lot of good.
It was a good game. Unfortunately, Derek Carr had 2 more interceptions in the game. Mm-hmm. We got away with it because our defense played so good.
The long interception didn't hurt as much as most interceptions because it was like 3rd and 3 and it was basically like a 40-yard punt. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It flipped the field. So again, no interception's good, but if you're going to throw an interception, at least it was like essentially a punt, which helped. The second interception was brutal. That was throwing across his body. Okay. Didn't see the linebacker.
I watched that from every conceivable angle. Derek Carr was not pressured against when he threw the ball to DeSean Jackson. He just short-dicked it. He just shorted it. Yeah. That's all it was. And there was no excuse for it.
Great play call. No excuse. Great read. Great decision. Just shorted it.
Just short it, and you can't underthrow a guy like that. You have to, if anything, overthrow him and make him run in and just turn the Jets on. He still has the Jets to run a straight line. So the second one, this is an issue that Derek Carr has at times. He locks into a receiver. So not only did he pump fake to Zay Jones, he didn't look anywhere else, and then he threw to Zay Jones. So
he was looking at him like he was on a deserted island and Zay Jones is like a hamburger. He was
pump fake.
I think I saw drool come down his mouth when he was looking at Zay.
He pump fakes, which got Darius Leonard's attention of the crossing route, right? So he pump fakes to him. He lets Zay Jones clear the middle linebacker, but then Darius Leonard's just sitting there on the flat. He's like, whoa, he pump faked him. He's still staring him down. Let me kind of float over a little bit and bang, got himself a pretty easy interception there. So those are tough, man. We have to clean that stuff up because it's one of those things where we got away with it, but against some of these more high-powered offensive teams who have good offenses and or more dynamic and diverse offenses that aren't just run heavy, we're not going to be able to get away with that. You do those kind of turnovers, and they're going to turn those into touchdowns, no problem. Another thing, another bad, there's one more here, is our end of the half and end of the game defense, way too soft, man. we've been saying it before when we have leads and giving up multiple touchdowns toward the end of the game. It's like we get this like softer prevent style defense, but it's not a true prevent. It's kind of like our defense, but just a little bit more relaxed. I don't like it at all.
Yeah. So I rewatched that drive. We weren't in prevent. We were in base defense.
Just softer.
But it was soft. And we had no rush. We had zero pass rush on that drive. Like the Colts O-line held Crosby and Gakwe, Bylon, everybody at bay. And so it made like even below average quarterbacks like the Carson Wentzes of the world. If you have clean pockets and plenty of time and you're going against a cover three zone defense, right? Like
if you know what they're
saying, that's what I was thinking. Like, Bradley, damn it. Why are we doing this? Is clearly a prevent defense. That's the only way Carson Wentz is going to throw this many 50 something yards on us in one drive. I went back and looked at it. I was like, no, it was base defense. It's just no pressure. It was just one drive and zero pressure. And that's something that's going to plague this defense for the rest of the season and into the playoffs. If we get zero pressure, this is what's going to happen. Like our DBs are playing great, but it's Bradley's entire scheme. Get pressure with four down linemen and let everything develop from there. When plan A doesn't work, when like step one isn't happening, like we're going to see more of this if that's the case.
For sure. That's definitely what, it's a copycat league. They say if they find out what works, then people are going to copy it. All right. That's the bad, the ugly. Blech. Trevon Merrick knocked an interception away from Casey Hayward. It bounced up in the air, landed into T.Y.'s Hilton hands for the easiest touchdown ever. Like the ball caught him. Mm-hmm. That was pretty ugly.
There's been two plays where Casey Hayward Jr. looked like the really disappointed older brother. You're like, fuck, you got us caught. Like we broke curfew and you got us caught. I think it was Dalen Levitt's interception when he went to return it and it could have easily been a touchdown. But he cut it back inside instead of just following Casey Hayward. Right. And you see Hayward just kind of be like he literally is doing this mid return. He's just like this and like pointing, like, what are you doing? This was the other one after Merrick, just like literally, it was Merrick's best defense of the season. Like he defended Hayward from getting that interception. And Hayward, as we know, is the king of almost getting interceptions this season. And Hayward just looked at him like, I can't catch a goddamn break.
Merrick's first egregious interception debacle cost us a game against the Washington football team. This one could have very well cost us the game. So that's pretty ugly. Got to get cleaned up. And we talked about it earlier. Nate Hobbs, really, bro? Come on, man. There's nothing anyone can say at this point that's going to make a difference. It's like, have you talked about it enough? Yes. What else can we say? It's all about the choices and decisions of the individual person now. And Nate Hobbs, you just got to be better, man. That's it for the good, the bad, and the ugly today.
Wah, wah, wah. All right. Ready to do some what up, Winbacks?
Sure, why not?
Well, we have to because I already played the lower third. VL8962, big win. Nothing but congrats and praise, but kind of feel like making the playoffs will only complicate things this offseason. Stop, timeout, end this. Tanking on the idea of like, well, do we want to win this? Do we want to glue some? Should we like not win? Stop. This isn't the NBA. This is not part of the mentality. You don't tank in the NFL. A losing culture is something that can embed itself like a virus into a locker room and into a team. You play to be as good as possible. Everything. Maybe if you're 0-15 and there's another team that's 0-15 and you really want the number one draft pick, then maybe you have a conversation. But this whole like, well, do we even want to go to the playoffs? Fuck yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We talked about the Giants getting hot, winning their last four games and then winning the Super Bowl that year. I mean, they won what? 8 straight games. They won their last 4 regular season games. They won the wild card, divisional and conference championship. And then they won the Super Bowl. It can happen. And the only way it happens is if you try to win the game. And yeah, I don't even want to entertain this question. It's just, it's silly.
Mike Creamer, which I can neither confirm nor deny is his born name or his real name. Maybe like the Angels, the Chargers can tweak their name to add character. I suggest that the moniker, the West Hollywood Sparklers of Los Angeles, has a satisfying ring to it. I mean,
we hope
maybe a change of name will make people actually in Los Angeles care about the Chargers. Because he's talking about, remember when the Angels were called like the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim? Like they were they're still called that. So someone's like, yeah, watch baseball. But they went from the California Angels to the Anaheim Angels to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Like, can we just like claim everything? Like the San Diego, Los Angeles Chargers of
Southern California,
of the Rocky Mountains.
Like, I have a t-shirt that says the Los Angeles Mexican Chargers of Los Angeles.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
It's just silly. No one cares about the Chargers.
So last show you were saying one, like Juan, like, yeah, we totally Juan tonight. Like you're saying your name. You were, well, according to Top Three Entertainment, he says he pronounces Juan like wonton soup.
That sounds kind of good.
Yeah. Maybe it's less Juan and more Juan instead of one. It's one, like the number one, like you won the game. Say one.
No, it's won. We won the game.
No, you won the game. You don't won a game.
I didn't say won the game. I didn't hock a loogie. I said we won the game. One is O-N-E. We won the game is W-O-N.
They're pronounced exactly the same, even though they're spelled different.
No, they're not.
They're both pronounced one. You won the game. One, two, three, and I won the game. And I won this argument.
Oh, no. I've always said Juan. We won the game.
You've always said it wrong.
Let's see what Google Voice says. Bullshit.
Google Voice is going to be the ultimate authority? I'm curious. I'm genuinely curious.
It just popped into my head right now.
One, it's one. You won the game. One, two, three, four. You are the number one dipshit.
All right, let's see.
Juan.
Hey,
one,
just like I said it. Just like I said it.
Juan. Google does it wrong.
Juan. Juan.
Now put your name Juan in. See what happens.
Okay, we'll see. Hang on.
J-U-A-N. I'm very curious now. If it, and whatever it says is what I'm going to call you. Please say it. Please Juan. Let it say Juan.
Juan.
Quinn. I'm calling Quinn. You Quinn. So according to Quinn. Google, if Google speak is exactly what we go on.
Hang on a second. Quinn. Let's see this shit again.
Juan Soto.
Quinn.
Quinn. Quinn. Nah, just it all fucked up.
All right. There you go. You're right.
Damn it.
It's called Juan and it's called Juan.
There's no sound. Where do you get that hawk and looky sound from? It's just Juan. They won the game.
Yeah, well, hopefully we're gonna win this game coming up on Sunday. We're gonna do a lot for the first time, and we're making history. In the first time in the history of the Autumn Windbags, we're going to do a live pregame show right before Chargers Raiders Sunday night, last game of the regular season. Win puts us in the playoffs for the first time since 2016, second time in 20 years. You know, we're going to be there live. We'll do a live pre-show, live post-show. We'll also do some more videos leading up to it because it's one of the biggest weeks for a Raider fan in a very long time, many, many years.
Okay.
We'll be holding your hands throughout the whole way. Until then, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really, really appreciate it. Make sure you check out our YouTube channel as well. A lot of bonus content on there. A lot of live shows as well that we think that you will really dig. Until next time, later.